Ahead and get started. We've got a couple of items on the agenda for this afternoon. First up, we have John Wade, and I don't know if there are others here to give us an update on the Journey to Growth initiative. So I won't steal your thunder. I'll let you go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have a fairly brief presentation. We've been at Journey to Growth for the past seems like a little bit longer, about 4 years. We started talking about this, and that was based on a number of conversations with some of you, the mayor, others, that recognized as we were building out the, we'll talk more about that, the tremendously successful Destination Medical Center initiative, that we also needed to make sure that we were paying attention into many areas of overlap as well, workforce and education, transportation. You'll hear some of those crossover themes. But really what we are most about is really creating and focusing on the rest of the economy outside of the medical complex, or the current 40% of our economy. And to further paraphrase what the mayor said in the past, I'll kind of butcher this a little bit, but was once asked, what's it like being from a one-horse town? And the response back, rightfully so, was it's not bad when you're riding Secretariat. But we also know that we need to have a lot of other things in that stable in order to ensure our long-term viability and success. And we believe this community initiative, Journey to Growth, will at least in part provide support, not be the be-all, end-all, not be a standalone agency that's going to take a lot of resources, but rather work through, it's bottom up, work through organizations and institutions that are in this community today, in the private and the public sector, to really look at how we can best align our resources. Ultimately, yes, there will be measurements applied to this, and we will need to go out and be more aggressive in how we recruit non-medical related industry and business in key target areas that we'll talk more about to our community. But this isn't just a Rochester initiative. And heretofore, we've not asked you for financial resources, but there's always that opportunity in the future. So we put that aside. And also of note, and I'll talk about the rest of the board, but Randy Staver also serves on the Journey to Growth board. But this also includes 8 counties in southeast Minnesota. So what we realized is through a lot of the Destination Medical Center work that some 50,000 people a day come into this city to work. We could never survive without a very strong neighborhood. And what we found is we've been talking more and did a lot of research related to Journey to Growth, how many communities in our area want to be a part of this as well. Because we all feed on each other. We all live with each other. And we want to continue to build those strong relationships while at the same time understanding that we have a number of great economic development opportunities right here in the community. So that was just kind of a 30,000-foot view of Journey to Growth. Scott Haas is an attorney in Rochester, involved in development, and has served on a number of initiatives, various boards, and also serves on the Journey to Growth Board of Directors, and is here as well. So we can add in some other things as we go. He said I just touched this. Where am I touching? Hey,
there it
is.
There we go.
Whoops.
One too many times.
You just hit that once, and there's a quick keyboard
going over here.
Yeah, you think so?
There you go.
There we go. Thank you. What is Journey to Growth? You've heard a little bit about it, and we'll talk a little bit more as we go through this. What, again, this is talking about is how we complement. This is not in any way designed to take away from the great initiative, DMC, nor will it ever be as large. However, we know that even of the $6 billion in future development related to DMC, there are other sectors that are also included. That's not all Mayo development, for example. However, we know the changing economics of healthcare, focusing resources on growing other sectors of our economy. and we'll talk a little bit more about what those sectors are that we're looking at targeting. And again, this 40%, Mr. Quenbold and others in this room and elsewhere can tell you, when you get into that 40%, one business making up 40% of your economy, there are challenges to that. It can affect your credit rating. It can, I think we came out on one study as one of the least diversified cities in America. Was it out of 350? Michael, do you remember that number was? But it was of note and concern, and it's something we've talked about for years too. And I would also add that at the Rushmore level of the Mayo Clinic, they too recognize, and Jeff Bolton, if he were here, would also say that this initiative is very, very important to continue to grow and expand and diversify the economy.
The way that I describe the complementary nature of BMC and J2G is that BMC, as you know, is regarding a district, and that district is very well defined and it's very, very small. It has a huge economic impact, but it also impacts the eight counties that J2G is trying to focus on and try to expand and diversify so that we take advantage of trailing spouses and all the other resources that are out there. So it really is a complementary program.
It's complementary, and again, it's regional in focus. We looked at Market Street, and again, for everyone in this room and everyone in the city or region, you can go online at ready.com. The left-hand column, you can see Journey to Growth. And you can look at the entire, many of you have, the entire Market Street study. Market Street is a recognized firm. I think they're on their third arrangement with the city of Austin, Texas. They're second with the city of Des Moines, Kansas City, Madison, and other communities that they have worked with. So I urge you, if you'd like to know more about the plan itself, we're talking about more as we're moving forward, all of that information is out there. We're also having a meeting tomorrow at 7 a.m. at the Holiday Inn downtown. That is where you have the board of directors, and then the board, unlike some initiatives in the community where it's top-down, I don't mean the city, but I mean other initiatives, and sometimes things are predetermined with predetermined outcomes. This is really the opposite. We took a really strong foundational element, and we are allowing 10 different committees, which we'll talk about, some of you are part of those, to really help map out, given a set of circumstances, where we should be going and growing. And then they are reporting back together in one setting. That first meeting is tomorrow at 7 a.m. for not only the co-chairs of those committees, the board of directors, but we decided we opened it up, and we have some 200 people that have now signed up to come and hear what's going on with Journey to Growth. So as far as anything I have ever been a part of in this community, as long as we've been doing a lot of these things, nothing has resonated as quickly as Journey to Growth has, as people hear about it and focus.
Sure. If you look on the left-hand side, it's kind of a chronological outline of where we've been. We started with community and programmatic analysis, and Market Street helped us do that. They put together focus groups of community leaders, government leaders, and others to gather information, as well as surveys. From that, they went to a target sector analysis. They put information that they received from the first step into their consulting computer and came up with a variety of things we'll talk about a little bit later. And they shot out the Journey to Growth plan. As John said, that's all public information. It's all out on the Internet at Ready site, and now we're in implementation stage. We started this really about end of summer when we put together the Journey of Growth board, and we've just kicked off and kind of we'll have our second meeting of all the co-chairs, and we've just filled all the committees that we'll talk about a little bit later. So the first one was community and programmatic analysis, and what we found, we need to continue to grow that entrepreneurial ecosystem that we've had some success with. We need to make sure that we keep that going. Preserve our community culture, something that's also been big in a lot of the discussions with DMC. Diversify away from healthcare. We're never going to be away from healthcare. What we want to do is get that number of 40% dependence down, if at all possible. Also preparing students for local jobs, as many of you know, that we now have a problem filling jobs. And that's only going to get worse. And the Chamber's been working on that with Workforce 2020, but it's really hitting home with a lot of business owners right now. And then making our region stickier for talent, making people want to stay here, raise their families, and give them careers and give them that opportunity.
The biggest challenge we have is really not access to or development of the great idea, whatever that might be, or capital, but it really is workforce. We're basically at full employment today. Mayo, I think, has about 2,000 open jobs today. You can look at businesses our size. We've got about 100, a little over 100 employees, or smaller businesses, wherever you might fit. Almost everyone is starved for new employees in a variety of areas. We're working also closely with our friends at Grauk. I know you're a funder also of Grauk. They've got some really great things going on in the workforce education arena, as do a number of other organizations that work in that space. But to me, the greatest threat we have is our ability to attract and retain a qualified workforce to fuel this, because if we want to shut off that growth, it's really not going to be our access to capital. It's really, capital, yes, but it's really human capital. I think as we did the Destination Medical Center work, some 67, we've only got 87 counties in the state, right? And some 60, what was the number, over 60 counties send people to work here every day in the state. So people coming from a long way. We have, in our small business, relatively, we have 4 people that come from northern Iowa, for example, every day to go to work. So that is a very, very big issue for all of us.
Next, they looked at target sector analysis. So they looked at kind of what we have here and what we have opportunities for. So they looked at our workforce capacity and then the presence of top employers, the opportunity for future development as we go forward, and then the wage and data trends that we have here, as well as competitive position of suburban and rural communities, as you'll see later in some of the target areas. They checked to see what we have here outside of the Rochester area. So that's what they looked at. And what they came up with for target sectors, the 5 areas of this plan, again, it's a 5-year economic development plan. The 5 areas they're going to focus on are computer system design and production. We have some wonderful facilities just on the north side of Rochester. We have some people who've been displaced in the last few years in the industry of computer system design and production. There's huge opportunity in human capital out there that we can harness, as well as food processing, wonderful ag and transportation routes where we are situated geographically, manufacturing sector, and then convention and tourism. We are a medical tourist town. We can be much more than that as a region as we focus on the 8 counties with some of the wildlife and rivers and other things that we have. And then also medical technology, which is what we also call advanced healthcare. So it's not the way that we develop or deliver healthcare locally or on a clinic level or on a hospital level. What can we do using the assets that we have here around healthcare to do some really neat advanced things and attract some people on an international level?
Mm-hmm. And we have all heard about that project to the north in Pine Island over the last several years, what that may or may not be. And we wish them well with that project. But when I look at, and Scott lightly touched on it, when you look at one facility in Northwest Rochester that has some 3 million square feet with an absolutely tremendous anchor tenant and several other companies that are also in that area, we also see that as a tremendous opportunity for growth. Indeed, we have more commercial space available today we probably had in the history of the city. There's a lot of space available, and we think that we could better capitalize on that space. And as we look at these other areas of growth and development, they will also, in some cases, need a place to be housed. And we also know that a lot of those businesses, even if they're developed in the downtown area, won't grow in the downtown area, and we'll want to work outside of that area. We want to have very good, not only parcels of land, but also how we could reuse or reutilize some of that existing square footage that's out there today. Here's how we do it. Expand and diversify the regional economy, optimize the talent base, and become a connected region and cohesive. We've had a lot of great things. The mayor, Randy, your predecessors, except, you know, that have all reached out of this community to work together with our neighbors. But what we have found through this initiative is that our neighbors very much want to work together and grow together as we move forward. And it's not just, again, there's nothing about pure business. There's not about, you know, we're going to recruit big boxes here, those kind of things. It really is about taking a base approach to all these things. We talked about workforce and education. We talked about talent, how we align our resources so that when we go out on the road, and we will be, to recruit other businesses, know that it's going to be, but that those recruitment efforts are going to be in specific targeted areas that have a lot of research behind them. Yeah.
It's from those three things that were just there on the bottom that we came up with our 10 journey committees. So we have 10 separate committees that are kind of leading the charge here, and there's 20 co-chairs. So each committee has two people that are not on the Journey to Growth board that are heading them up. And from those 20 committees, we're estimating there'll be about 500 community volunteers that will be staffing those different committees and subcommittees. We're working with 30-plus communities, 50-plus townships, the 8 counties, and then we have one board of directors. Everyone on the board of directors is assigned to one of the Journey committees, so there's board representation. And then the Chamber and Ready have really done this together. Their staff are going to be actually supporting, their support staff is going to be supporting each one of those Journey committees. So I'm on the marketing committee, and we have a liaison who does a lot of the support work for us through Ready on our committee.
It's very important that each of the board members are assigned into each of the committees. And again, when we say, well, we have a relatively small budget, however, we always need resources, that we're also working very closely, for example, in diversity-related. Diversity-related work is important, and it was very important in the Market Street study. The largest focus groups that we did as part of the research were focused around ways to improve the diversity capacity of our community, to make sure we're encouraging and welcoming. And so, for example, when we talk about those 500 regional volunteers, that could be, for example, Kayhawker, for example, is not only involved in one of the committees, but we intend to use the resources of the Diversity Council. This is not intended to create new organizations, or it is to utilize fully the organizations that we already have, both in the community and region.
So every circle is one of the 10 one of the 10 committees. So the first one is marketing, and the co-chairs are Al Menino and Shannon Konecki. Next is the economic, which is Elaine Gary and Walt Ling. I just need to stop here. We've got some pretty good firepower that has joined us, and it's been a wonderful coup to get a lot of these names up here. Entrepreneurship, we have Al Burning and Jim Rogers. For governing, we have Lee Johnson, who I think I saw in the room here, as well as Randy Demmer. Early childhood, we have Jerome Furson and Mark Matuska. Workforce, Aaron Beneke and Jessica Erke. Talent is Norm Doty and Tessa Wang. Diversity and inclusion is Barbara Jordan and Dwayne Salk. Then the regional group is Dan Christensen and Ed McBride. And last but not least, transportation and communication is Doug Eaton and John Reed.
This is a little bit about who the board of directors are. Let's kind of see that. We have incorporated. It is a nonprofit that has been set up under the support of the Ready organization, but it is sustaining. We've put a lot of work into it, as those of you know that do those things, but we're a very good lawyer, and I appreciate everything he did. But you can see who the individuals are that are serving on the board, and again, it is very much a working board, and I'm incredibly grateful for the amount of work that not only these people do by coming to meetings like you do, but like you also do. There's a lot of work outside of the formalized meetings, and they have worked very hard to continue to move this process along. And I also would be remiss, Scott mentioned it too, if I didn't recognize the work that Ready has also done. We hired a staff person, really, Heather Holmes, to help coordinate a lot of our efforts related to Journey to Growth, and of course, the Chamber's involved as well. Again, we want to make sure that, a lot of people talk a transparency game, and that's a good thing. But we want to make sure that at every step of this process that we are putting out all of the information that each one of the committees is working on. There are quarterly reporting committees. Tomorrow is the first one. And many of those committees are just underway. They are populating those committees. We don't want them to be too large because we want them to be very functional. And again, we will continue to report out on a formalized quarterly basis, and those meetings will be open. And it's not just a reporting session, it's actually the meeting. So we learned this in Des Moines, actually, that one of the things, and they have a lot of horsepower on their board, but also on each of their committees, and they found that there was a Not only have they been very productive, but there's a bit of a competition as well amongst them because they all want to, they're all producers. They're, those people that you saw that are co-chairs are very good people, and they want to have real results, and it's been really pretty neat. I mean, you look at some of those committees, all of them, these are really some talented folks that are absolutely committed not only to growing and expanding our economy as the city of Rochester, but really paying close attention to the regional economy as well.
John touched on a budget earlier, and the consultants, as you all know, are very good at creating budgets and significant size budgets, and they did that for us. And what we did was not try to go out and raise that money immediately to satisfy that budget. What we said was we think we can do it a little bit better, and we want our committees to actually form their own budgets. So the committees themselves have the autonomy to create their own budget, and if their budget is significant, they can help us go find that money and find that capital. We've already gotten a lot of support out there through a variety of organizations, but it really is, kind of showed me it's committee-driven. The committees have the ability to go and create their own budgets and find ways to fill those.
Right. And with that said, we have had a fundraising effort going on. We have received a tremendous amount of support from the business community. A number of our neighboring government units as well are interested in supporting this work. And the annual budget will be less than $500,000, but considerably less. Again, we're not arming the committees with money and saying this is your budget, but really we're helping not only create it, or they creating it, but it's utilizing the resources that are already there and working together with organizations that are already working in each of those areas. It's led to some good things. I spoke to Randy Johnson today from the Workforce Center. I know you heard the same comment that some of the numbers that we projected related to economic growth, a number of those numbers were done, what, Gary, 6 years ago that we started looking at some of those. Some have been updated. We need to do more updating to see where we're really at as our current economy. And also, I believe it will illustrate the need to continue to work to further diversify the economy. And with that, unless I missed this slide, thank you. If you might have any questions that we could answer now.
Well, just a comment, John, to get started. I think at first blush, people might wonder, well, what's the city's role or what's our involvement in something like this? And I think you touched on the job market early on. We're full employment. But as we look at the national statistics, I think we find that a lot of the jobs are part-time, and they might not necessarily pay the highest wages, and I'm sure our community to some degree reflects that. So what's our role? I think as we proceed with our work, we can do things like encourage affordable housing, things like that. That will help draw and keep people to our community if they can truly afford to live here. Because again, we're not talking like a lot of six-figure jobs out there. We need to be able to respond to a diverse demographic and a diverse economy. So in my opinion, that's one area in which why we care and some of our involvement. Mr. Ruskin.
I guess, I'm on the writing boards. I've seen this coming, and I guess when I see this, I just think there's so much about this that's good. It all makes so much sense, and I love the way that we've, the setup is there, the structure is there, and the buy-in from everybody. A couple things that I want to highlight or just that you talked about here was extremely important factor is to get the region all the regional resources involved to attract new businesses to the area. I've been amazed at how when you talk about this, all the smaller cities and the communities in around say we want to be part of this too. They see the value in this. I don't think they can do it on their own, so we need to kind of work together to make that happen. And with that, every community, every part of this region has another resource and another opportunity that maybe we can build on. So I love that. And then I think too, right now you mentioned complement DMC. I think this is a critical time for this to happen because right now we do have a lot of attention with the DMC initiative, and there's a lot of people looking at Rochester, which almost makes it a little bit easier. And that's where I think the complement is really healthy. So great job, and just excited to see what's going to come out of this.
Thank you, and I think that's also been, and you've heard this as well, Ed, that one of the people that was mentioned is co-chairing the entrepreneurial committee. It shows up as Jim Rogers. It's Jim Rogers, James A. Rogers, and he's also chair of Mayo Clinic Ventures. and recognizes the importance and the need not only for growing that area of the economy, but clearly recognizes the importance of entrepreneurism beyond specifically the healthcare.
Well, when we see the energy that's going in the downtown, the excitement that, the bioscience and all that is bringing, then you take a look at what we can do surrounding that with, complementing businesses and so on. I just think this is the right time for this, so I certainly am supportive and do whatever we can to help them.
Mr. Bilderbeck, then Ms. Means.
John, Scott, thank you for coming. This is very impressive. I think it's important, and it was touched upon, about the fact that we need to weave other businesses, other activities into our city. The fact is we need jobs for people who come to Rochester. You talk about sticky. When you start looking at spouses and their need for jobs, when you're looking at other avenues of entertainment and activities, this talks about that. I mean, this is all about making this region, as Mr. Ruska said, our region, a stronger piece. And we've talked about this before. The stronger the region is, the stronger Rochester is. The stronger Rochester is, the stronger our region is. And I think it's great when we can see these kind of activities of reaching out and, in the same tone, the people of our surrounding communities wanting to be a part of it. I think that just makes this region a better place to live. So thank you.
Ms. Mean.
I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to come out today. I have been a little remiss, I think, because I was really not that aware of Journey to Growth until I heard the presentation during the Grout board meeting. It was real exciting to see you acknowledge that our success is really depending on how well we connect with our region. And another point that's really exciting to me, and I'm hoping this word is getting out, and you've already said that you're reaching into at least 8 counties in southeast Minnesota. But many of us have heard on the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities or during time in Washington that with our local delegation of Minnesota elected officials that they feel excluded. There's so much emphasis with Rochester, but they have to understand, and you are going to deliver this message as you continue, that we are connected, we're dependent on all of them, and we want that inclusive approach. So thank you so much. Thank you to Mr. Haas.
Connecting your region has been interesting. It's a challenge and an opportunity, and I would be lying if I didn't tell you that we've received some, I wouldn't call it opposition, but people saying we've heard this all before. And the only way we can do it is the proof is in the pudding, if we actually go out and do it. And we've been doing it by reaching out to those folks, putting them on committees, having them chair committees, because they see the opportunity, they want to be part of it, but they've heard before that it's just about Rochester, and it really isn't.
I think, as Randy said earlier, there are a number of things that you do every day in this these positions you're in. The city does. Some of us have been involved and still are involved in various developments in the community or, frankly, in the region. And, while sometimes, things are not always perfect with the way these processes go, I think the city of Rochester does a lot of things really, really well. And some of those things that are going on, including, as I understand it, a proposal for a development coordinator. And the reason I mention that is because we've spent so many years talking about that. And so things don't always happen immediately or as fast as we would like them. But I'll tell you what, that is the position that we were talking about. Don't let anyone tell you any different. That's the position we've been talking about for a lot of years. How it gets implemented is your business, the administration's business. But that development coordinator is a really important position to be in the business community. And to see your leadership, frankly, in that area is should also be commended.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, I'm supportive, obviously, of the initiative, the J2G, with the DMC projecting 35,000 to 40,000 jobs over the next 20 years, is it possible that at the end of that, not all of those are going to be Mayo, but you still would have 40% of this big horse, that's still 40%. But you still have to add more other jobs. But it would not be a failure if at the end that 40% didn't go down.
Well, no, not if it depends how far you went up on the other side, but I think that the, and remember, of the 35,000 jobs that we were projecting at the time, it was 16,000 were males.
Yep.
But I think that we also recognize that we also need to, and Gary Newman will re-tutorial me on this, but we also need to continue to really look at what that growth is going to be. We
sure.
did come up with a lot of those numbers about 6 years ago. When those projections were made. Is that about right? So we also need to take a look at that because we know a lot of people, businesses, government, housing, all kinds of other things are responding to something that was a 20-year plan, and which we also know was that $6 billion going forward was about the same as the $5.4 billion in the previous 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, as Ed said and others have said, to not lose the energy that DMC, we're not going to lose it, I don't mean that, but
right.
to capitalize on it, and to really, because it is such an exciting initiative for this region.
But, and like I say, just if we didn't reduce that 40%, I wouldn't want it to look like,
right.
oh, we didn't do what we said we were going to do.
No, I don't think there's a real failure here. I think that the only failure would be is to not capitalize on our opportunity.
True.
And how we ultimately measure that is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. But we have the right people, we have the right region, that and the right opportunity, and a great police force. to Roger's next. You never know what he might say. Supportive of the police force.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah. Again, thanks for coming. I think this is a really good initiative to get started. There's one piece of this that really excites me is that a lot of the membership and participation has self-identified and then self-organized around this project. I think that speaks a lot to how imperative it is. And I'll follow that up with the second piece I like about this is you've gotten investment from a lot of those stakeholders. And I think that self-organization and that investment is kind of coalescing. And I think it is in everyone's interest, but probably particularly in those interests, it's okay to be self-serving, that investing in the local economy will build a platform that better makes us more robust, hopefully also makes this region a better place for their own businesses to do business. And I think that's at the large scale. A reason I'm excited about this is that the ability to kick this off, have it run independently, and have it kind of manned by the very businesses that kind of provide the economic backbone for our community is exciting to watch. On the mayor's point, a little bit to your follow-up, I wonder if I didn't see on that chart someone who I would say maybe the board of directors, but is there a set of metrics you're looking at using for kind of validating what success is, or do you have an idea of in your mind how we will measure the success of J2G?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think it's not, and I will tell you this, it's not yet been answered.
Okay.
Because, again, we're very careful about this, to rather than have it this way, where we say this is what we need to do, and we're going to grow X percent, was to really see it develop and evolve. And that's why I'm fascinated by this process. Because I don't have the plan in a vault somewhere that I'm dishing out to people as we go. The plan is being developed as we go. This is a great example of how it is a design build, truly. And it makes me very excited to continue to watch what those groups do. I don't know what they're going to come up with. But the other thing I know is you get the right people around the table, and we have it not only on the board, not that there's a lot of other great people that can also be in this process, and those chairs are highly competitive people. They're measured people. They do that in their day jobs or whatever that might be in the public and private sector. It'll be very interesting to see, and I think, frankly, they will exceed whatever expectation I might have had as it comes to measurements in each of those given areas. So I really don't have an answer
for that, but
I'm really excited about seeing it come.
And I think the one piece of feedback I liked about the different organizations, the clearly defined areas and kind of that expertise that can be built like that. One interesting thing kind of coming from the startup world is kind of having an independent body that sets the measures. And so if one of those was, how do we measure success? I think it's worthwhile to have an independent group that isn't a stakeholder in success set up kind of some measures by which we can kind of determine. So food for thought.
I like that. That'd be something you could do.
Okay.
We're always looking for there you go. Anything else that we can...
All right, anyone else? Mr. Wood?
I'm particularly interested in the comment that we want to be stickier with talent. I was surprised to see we've had this phenomenal growth over the last 25 years, you know, I think 35, 40,000 people over that time. And if you take out international migration and you take over births over deaths, we actually have a negative net domestic migration. In other words, we're losing more people than we're gaining. And, you know, it's something the community struggles with, you know, something my generation struggles with, but how do you see as the way that we're going to become stickier with talent?
Yeah, I think that many things very good are going on here today that keep people, young families like yours, you know, that want to stay here. IBM always used to say it was the hardest place to recruit into and the hardest place to get people to leave or transfer to a different place somewhere in the world. We've got to continue to do, and I think that it's a great question, Michael, because it's not a big throw or a big play that's going to make us stick here. It's a number of different things that we've got to keep doing on a daily basis, whether it's bikes or trails or a vibrant downtown or really good positions. And I remember I was a part of a lot of the research we did related to DMC, and we'd get these focus groups in rooms, and we were behind these curtains watching, you know, as they asked questions, what are the most important things to you about Rochester? You know, it really wasn't some of the things that I would immediately kind of think about. A lot of them said, I really like my neighborhood. I feel safe in Rochester. You know, it's that, you know, we've got good parks. We've got, you know, a lot of those amenities that, you know, really do make it a special place. But there are, in part, I think, as we look at, and you look at who's on these committees and how we're going to continue to engage the community, it's not all a bunch of guys who look like me. It's a good thing. I know you're thinking that. But it's demographically and otherwise, we have to bring more people to the table because we need to bring more people to the table. The other great thing about that point you just made is sometimes we get caught up in our own splendor and think that we are just growing. And when we look at this, we put up those other cities that this consultant's working for.
Yeah.
But they're doing some amazing things to recruit people into those cities and throughout America. It's highly competitive. There are a lot of nice cities, not as nice as ours, but there are a lot of nice cities, you know, around the United States of America. Austin, Texas, it was kind of interesting, just they both happened to be on that list. Austin, Texas recently held a big event. I can't remember what they it was a music event or something. Thank you. And the city of Des Moines sent a big, they put a big booth down there to recruit people to come to Des Moines to work. So people are certainly becoming more and more aggressive, but as all of you travel, and I do, and you look at other downtowns, there are a lot of nicer cities, there's a lot of nice things going on, but this is really a nice city. I mean, this is a neat place to come back to, but we can do more. So I think it's more smaller things, Michael, than it is, you know, whatever that big, shiny city, you know, might be.
Yeah, and I know our newer are doing some good things, and then they look at the most recent year's numbers, and they were even worse, which is a little bit, you know, disappointing to see that. I thought you were going to answer with better broadband, but...
Well, as you know, since you brought it up, we are pleased, and we're going to look at that as well, just to show how competitive that marketplace is right now, and...
I look forward to seeing that.
Most people wouldn't even think about entering that competitive market, but you brought that up.
Good.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity.
Good, I appreciate it. I bet you don't find three. We'll see who's right. The other part that I'm a little bit concerned about, too, and this is something we have a fairly, our community is going to be quite expensive due to a lack of affordable housing and then a lack of overall housing that's contributing to that as well. And two of the five categories you brought up are important industries, but they're also notorious for poverty level wages. And how are we going to make sure that our, as we grow the hospitality industry and as we grow the food processing industry, those are living wage jobs and not, you know, $10 an hour jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know that necessarily in the ag sector that was meant to be more processing necessarily.
Okay.
Although that is any economy grows, I wish that we could grow only $100,000 a year jobs. We know there's a large service sector that comes with $100,000 a year jobs. We also know, as you said, we have a long tradition of a very large hospitality industry. And we need to do everything that we can do in those businesses, and much of it is driven by being in business. You know, I don't have a minimum wage job, and many businesses I know don't have one because we can't you can't function with a minimum wage job. So I think that in part because of how tight this market is, we reflect that in the payroll that we're making, and the levels of that that compensation that in order to get people, and you got to pay more in some cases to get people. But we know that that service sector will continue to grow with high sector with high income positions that come in as well. It does services or more services are consumed by high income producers. So, you know, I think it's about balance as far as housing. There are a number of different organizations around here watching it. It is not something that has shown up on the business community's radar as much. You don't usually, the questions we get are not about, I can't get a job there. I can't come to work for you because I can't find a house or apartment. Although it does come up, we heard it from a vice president of Winona State, I think this morning, who was looking and kind of expressing that it was kind of a tough market. Yeah. Clearly she wasn't in the workforce housing category. Yeah. But it's something that I think we have done well over time, Michael. I think that we, from a planning perspective, continue to keep this a diversified building climate and not have large pockets of wealth or poverty or workforce is a good thing. I think we'd be proud of what we've done here and continue to do.
Mr. Ruska.
I just wanted to tag on to the stickiness part that we were talking about here a little bit. And I don't know where it would fall, but what's really be, maybe somebody's doing this and I just haven't seen it, but it'd be really interesting to know when the people move out of the region, what it is that they didn't like about the region. You know, a lot of times you do your exit interviews and you do your, you know, sometimes it's hard to hear the things you don't want to hear, or it's hard to hear what you're doing wrong or what you're not providing. But, man, it would sure be good to have some data on what is it that people aren't finding in the city versus us just trying to guess. And we're sitting here, well, maybe it's housing, maybe it's entertainment, you know. Yeah. And I think, you know, if we actually were able to collect that data and give us some raw facts, that might be helpful to us trying to figure out.
I think it's probably out there to a certain degree with some of our larger employers. And we could, it's a very good point. You know, I could do a better job of, you know, taking that information and finding
out. Accurate, real data to know
right.
What we're looking for. So,
okay. Yeah. Any final comments or questions? We'll wrap up with Ms.
One
Mink.
Quick question. How are you working with the Workforce Center? And also, what is your connection with the union? Because they have really good pay. They're critical jobs that we certainly need and will continue to have a demand for them as we grow.
Mm-hmm. Two great questions. We're working very closely with the Workforce Center. And as you know, our workforce initiatives are largely siloed. And we're doing more, not just us, but other people as well are doing more to bring those efforts together. I know there's an initiative going on that Randy Johnson chairs. And they're going to be going through a broader process to look at that. You had two questions. The first was the workforce and the labor.
Yes.
We have had, through our relationships for years, a very strong connection to organized labor, and particularly the workforce-related shops, whether that's the electrical workers, the mechanical, all of those shops play a critical role, not only in producing really good jobs or the private sector doing that and working together, but also from a training perspective. If you've taken that, and I'm sure you have seen a number of these facilities, but it's the electrical or mechanical, whatever those, the electrical is amazing. You know, how can we better utilize those centers as well? So we've had, related to workforce for years, a very close collaboration with the labor units.
Thank you.
And again, it's at the committee level that they're working, depending on the charge of that particular committee, and they would go out and meet the groups that would satisfy their original mm-hmm. charge and then come back to us, and we're really at the beginning stages of making those connections.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you
for
very
the
much.
Time. Sure you'll be back.
Thank
with,
you.
More
thank
information
you.
At a later date.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yes.
We have a demographer right here. In migration and
net domestic migration.
Yes.
Just rolls off the tongue.
I haven't heard that in a while.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have the police department review, and I applaud the chief for being the first to go on this. This is something new, again, that we wanted to try this year. Most of us know that it gets a little bit difficult to set the budget, talk about the budget in November, after we've already set the preliminary tax levy in September, so it just seems a little bit awkward. So something we're trying this year is to have each of the departments come forward in the April-May timeframe. And again, I think the purpose of this discussion is primarily twofold. One, we want to hear how did it go last year, 2014, in terms of your budget and performance, anything significant that kind of caught you off guard or noteworthy. And then secondly, give us kind of a heads up on things that might be in your thinking for 2016. So that again, this is not meant to be a prolonged discussion, but just a little bit of dialogue and hopefully give the department some insight as they go through the budget process in the next few summer months. So hopefully we'll find this to be mutually beneficial and we don't find ourselves being so surprised and saying no quite so much come November. So with that, Roger, I'll turn it over to you and let you walk through the information you presented.
Thank you. Speaking of growth, that lead in there, I will go through the past year's performance indicators and give you a baseline, I guess. As Mr. Stater indicated, this is a first up for all city departments and how we review this information. And I want to be more responsive to what your questions are, what your concerns are. So I don't intend to spend an awful lot of time on this year unless you have particular questions. I will give you an overview. Would like to address some of the future issues that we're expecting. Past year, most people, when they talk about police department organizational performance, they look at crime rates for a given area. I don't know that that's necessarily fair in the sense that the police department might not have an awful lot to do with the drop in crime, but we are very happy to take responsibility for it when that happens. And in this case, crime's been going steadily down for quite a while. Certainly during my tenure as chief and prior to that. Overall, last year, it decreased 0.3% when crime rates are figured on a per capita basis because of a modest increase in population. Overall, decrease to the crime rate was 1.4%. And what we focus on most is serious crime. And that went down significantly, 12.6%. That was largely due to an increase in or decrease in larceny cases, which the FBI still considers a serious crime for reasons unknown. Violent crime, which we have made a concerted effort to focus on, certainly during my tenure, decreased by 5.6%. There's a breakdown there by category. Probably as we talk about what Mr. Wade was forecasting and what they were addressing. One of the reasons that people come to Rochester, it's a good place to raise family and raise kids, low crime environment. How much lower? Violent crime, about 56% lower than in other communities our size. Property crime is 37% lower. I did include some clearance rates in there so you can have a general idea of what might be termed staff efficiency, but with credit to my staff in the police department, clearance rates increased from 46 to 48%. And if you're wondering how that compares nationally, that's 11% higher than similar size city. And property crime rates are 15% higher in terms of clearance rates. A word on the budget. We were under budget this year, so we typically are, $315,000 and change. Not that we don't have a place to spend that, but given the budget parameters, we'll just have to be in the black at this point. So that being said, page one looks good. Page two, not so much. That's our future concerns. And when I say that, I say it with the take that with a little grain of salt because we've identified some areas of concern and they're not concerns about what happens if the DMC develops, what happens if we get an increase in population. This is what's happening now. And a particular concern is our ability to respond for calls for service, where this used to be an issue of prioritization. That is, we have priority 1 through 5 calls. And what we were able to do in the past is give a lower priority to those lower priority calls that had a longer response time. And priority one calls, we would try very hard to make our appearance in less than 4 minutes as a standard that public safety shares, not only us, but the fire department. And in places of the city, that is now grown to somewhere between 12 and 28 minutes to get that priority one response. And I think that is a function, and I think what's important to understand about that is the investment that we've made in technology, and particularly in intelligence-led policing, that allows us to identify and address the most prolific offenders in our community so crime rates go down. That works well. It does nothing for when somebody picks up the phone and dials 911. There aren't boots on the ground. There's no way that the computer is going to solve that problem for us. That's where we are right now, and that is not a projection. That is a reality, particularly in the peripheral areas of the city, but also areas much closer into the city, and it affects every one of your wards. In addition to that, the demand for investigative resources is certainly outstripping our resources that we have right now. Human trafficking, child pornography, and exploitation, identity theft, computer fraud, along with all the computer forensic work that our folks are expected to do in investigation, create cases that we can't address. You're all familiar with the child pornography and exploitation thing that took place several months ago. Much needed, but tip of the iceberg in terms of what we're able to address with that. And it does not at all address what is out there in terms of caseload that we should be doing. Support services, I've outlined just very briefly for you, public safety dispatch, which of course, is when somebody calls 911, they expect the phone to be answered. That call load has gone up 38% in the last 4 years, but they've not seen an increase in staff for the last 14. That's getting precarious, to say the least. And the last thing that any city wants is to be is putting somebody on hold on a 911 call. And we're at the tail end of our resources in being able to address that particularly during peak time. We've done reorganization within the department to reorganize how our patrol division is structured in order to put more people out there at peak time. That, of course, means that we put people, less people out there during off-peak time. Unfortunately, that's when serious things can and do happen in the city. In addition to that, our records and evidence staff, particularly with some legislative mandates and some changes in terms of what we have to take in as evidence to store and what we have to take for safekeeping, in particular firearms, has increased our liability in that area very significantly. That problem is not going away, and we have neither the storage space nor the staff to deal with it. That problem is growing as we speak. As a result of all this, we identified 13 positions that we feel that we need in the police department to maintain current service level. 4 patrol officers, which is a direct response to the issue of response time, and how not simply a visibility issue for us, because we realize full well that that would give us essentially one more officer per platoon, and that's not going to address a lot of visibility issues or perhaps what the community is looking for in that regard. It will address some of our response time issues and make those officers more available to call. The investigator position is in direct demand for that technology that's required in investigations now. That is a field that is quickly outstripping our ability to respond to. The 4 dispatchers is based on call load. The evidence technician, the position that I mentioned in order to address that increasing demand for evidence storage, processing. The radio communication specialist, because we will not have an ability to fill that need, particularly when our officers retires here in the near future. And a crime analyst position that has been very significant in terms of our ability to identify and respond to prolific offenders. And this position as a research crime analyst is needed for our intelligence-led policing function to go forward in the future, as well as a planning and program manager that is, again, a technology-based issue that leverages our effectiveness. We've identified those needs, and that's, I think, what's important. That's what we're looking at today going forward. In the future, as we talked about growth, I think it's really important, and one of the reasons that I really wanted to be able to expand on this information that you have, is cities that grow in size, like Rochester, and as Rochester has been doing and is expected to do in the future, the demand for police service is not a lineal projection. If you look at other cities similar in size to Rochester, and look at ones that have experienced that growth, and I will use St. Paul as an example, because St. Paul is exactly the same size as Rochester. It is 54 square miles. St. Paul's population density, however, is much greater than Rochester. The population itself is 2.5 times greater than Rochester. Actually, a little less than that, but we'll round up. Their staffing, their police staffing, is 5 times as great. And that is not a lineal projection of simply population growth, and you keep pace with the population growth by so many officers per thousand. Population density drives demand for police service. It's 5 times as great in St. Paul. It's 7 times as great in Minneapolis. In any other city in the United States that has experienced a population density, that is the reality. What happens, and what we're most concerned about, is if we don't keep pace, we can't catch up. We're experiencing that right now, where we're seeing response times that are far above the acceptable level. And we're seeing the demand here, as we're asking and requesting for additional positions, that we're no longer able to do incrementally. The last 5 years, we've held the status quo on staffing. Since 2010, we've kept our budget within the previous year's level. That hasn't allowed an increase for staff, except what you were able to do and what we will do in the future with 2 additional officers coming on next month. If we fall behind in that equation, as other cities have experienced, we have little ability, the tax base has no ability to catch up to that. And we're really concerned about not only 2015, 2016 and beyond, is how we keep pace with that. That, as we can see in every other city in the country that experienced that dynamic, as population density increases, the demand for police service goes up geometrically, not arithmetically. That's what we're most concerned about. That's what our staffing requests are based on. And I would, in terms of the importance of that, I know, and I want to focus on the top of page 2 there. I know that it's easy to focus and look at crime rates, and if the community does, and look at those, how many serious crimes occur in Rochester issues, and how we address that. And we have put considerable emphasis on that. But please recognize that represents less than 2% of what our call load is. The other 98% of what we do. And when your neighbor falls off the ladder cleaning the gutters, when somebody has a heart attack because they're shoveling snow, when your daughter's in a car accident, when we have that vicious dog at large, none of those fall into the crime statistics. All of those fall into the demand for police service, and demand for police service right now, not in 12 to 28 minutes. So I am asking you now to consider that, as certainly as we look to budget issues in 2016, but also the planning for the future as how we contend for the public safety side of this equation. The growth of the city, DMC notwithstanding, that we stay ahead of that curve and don't fall behind. I will be happy to answer any of your questions.
Okay. Well, Roger, first off, thank you for the support, or report, sorry, the very short and to the point, and I appreciate that. One comment that I put out there as I was listening to you talk, you've identified some key areas of concern, and then you've identified or quantified some positions. One thing that would help me, I think, is I tend to think in terms of managing two objectives. I know they do this more often on the county side, but it's something that, that got me to thinking recently. So manage two objectives, and I try to draw correlations. So when we talk about the demand for investigative resources, for example, and I don't, I'm not looking for this today, but something that might help me better grasp the need is, you know, what is that, that case volume? And when we ask for another investigator, what kind of impact would that have? Would it result in a quicker turn rate of those investigative cases? Or so again, I'm just planning that thought as far as how do I manage to those objectives? If I want to reduce response time and I add two more patrol officers, what impact will that have? And I just put that out there as a comment as I listen to you speak.
Okay.
So, any others? Mr. Bilderback.
Roger, thank you. What would the 13 positions cost, I guess? I'm sure you have that. So.
I think it rounded off, it'd be like $1.4 million, something like that.
$100,000. I think so.
And then you talked about personnel. What are other needs that you would need? You talked a little bit about precincts in the past. Is that something, when did you expect to need something of that nature? What kind of timeline are you looking at for that? Or
well, earlier,
for equipment?
Earlier this year, the council approved a feasibility study for a new precinct. And currently they have 4 or 5 options, depending on how you count them, on the table in terms of what that precinct concept would look like, what options are for you. We're currently involved in some discussions with the county in terms of use of existing space and some other issues. Before we bring that forward to the council, we want to look at issues related to what plans the county has so we can make sure that we're in concert with those. I'm anticipating the precinct issue would come before you sometime within the next
couple months.
3 months or so, and you should have some identified objectives there. Does that resolve our staffing issues? It resolves some of our space issues, but not the, you know, core issues that we're talking about. So I would anticipate you'd see the results of that fairly soon. We have some preliminary information.
What about combined dispatch? Talked about dispatch, talked about new positions. It's, at one time there was discussion about expanding the service of our dispatch.
Yes.
Is that still in process?
It is. We've had in meetings with the fire chief and the sheriff, we believe to lay the groundwork for that combined dispatch is we first need to have create the entity, so to speak, of regional dispatch or joint dispatching. And there's a proposed, the fire chief has developed a proposed joint powers agreement for our agencies in Homestead County. And we believe after we laid the groundwork for that, that we can expand. And when we've had discussions with surrounding counties about that, there have been two issues. One is the governance issue. If we join in or join on to an organization, what's the governance? How much is it going to cost and what voice do we have in the governance of that, which the joint powers agreement would address. The other is compatibility of software, in particular computer programs, because there's a multitude of different formats out there that law enforcement and fire uses. And in order to address that, part of the joint powers agreement is who pays for what and allows that to take place. In discussions with the sheriff and the fire chief, I believe that that's probably something we'll also see come forward sometime this year in regard to that joint powers agreement that would allow that future expansion. That's what the status is today.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hickey.
Roger, thank you for the report. You've outlined some kind of some base needs for personnel just to really sustain what we have now. And I know in the past you've talked about intelligence-led policing and, you know, some possible avenues where we're going to maybe expand that. I was just going to see overall, just at a real high level, with the intelligence-led policing, we're more of in a sustainment mode, or there's quite a bit of growth, and how that potentially could impact, you know, future personnel needs, you know, based on where that's going.
I appreciate that. The intelligence-led policing implementation that we actually started in 2011, we projected that if, based on the number of prolific offenders and the crime they were responsible for, if that was successful, then we would see a corresponding drop. That is, if we got those people off the street, we'd see a corresponding drop in crime. And we actually observed that. I can't give you a cause and effect. I can only give you a correlation in that regard. We feel that we're about halfway through the implementation of that, because that halfway incorporated the identity insight portion of who is responsible for the crime and what is their relationship, what's the network. The other half of that, the when and where, the predictive analytics behind intelligence-led policing is in our SPSS program, which you've already approved and is already ready for implementation, but won't be implemented until the Oversight Commission, that we've had a previous discussion on, is formed and implemented, so we can go through this with community oversight to make sure that we're meeting the ethical expectations of the community. I expect that's going to make us more effective, make us more efficient in our response, particularly to reported crime, and really augment our ability to be in the right place at the right time. It's not going to obviously take the place of having the boots on the ground respond to issues as when somebody picks up that phone and calls 911, that they get a response within a time frame that the community expects and deserves.
Thank you. Mr. Rogers.
So we've talked about this. I don't know if we've talked about this in a public setting, but I've called on both you and the fire chief when we're talking about response times. Things like our land use patterns and our road connectivity really do affect that.
Yep.
And, you know, I hope that in the future we'll hear more from the police department and the fire department when we start doing really stupid things with land use and street connectivity, point out that there's a real cost to this and that cost of that police response time. And, you know, that you brought up the examples of, you know, a dog at large or something for response time, but, you know, having rode with the officers, my greatest concern is always the, you know, when there's not a lot of officers on and they need that backup, how quickly can they get there?
Yeah.
And the fact that we are 75% geographically the size of Minneapolis with less than one-third of the population demonstrates just how incredibly poorly we're handling land use right now. And the problem is fire department and police department are two of our more expensive areas, and you're not weighing into the very poor decisions that are leading to these outcomes. So it's not, you know, it's the road connectivity, it's land use, but then also, you know, you hit on a key one. We're the same geographic size as St. Paul, and it's not just that they have a bigger population than us. They've got a hell of a lot more tax capacity than us, too. And, you know, 80-90% of everything we're building in this community is a money loser. These suburban sprawl subdivisions cost more money to provide them services than, you know, than they're producing in taxes. And that's stressing our ability to fund things like the police department. And I really think that public safety has an obligation to get out of these sprawling tax capacity discussions as well, because this is what's really making it hard to fund these departments. You know, the sprawl in this community is it's reckless with our future fiscal needs, and we don't even understand how bad it is right now. You know, the other one I want to focus on a little bit is the with the expanding the dispatch, I'm very hesitant to do anything there just because technology is advancing so fast in this area that, and I think Councilmember Bilderback hit on this a little bit as well, but if there's more of a regional approach, I mean, what you really are concerned about with the dispatch is a certain number of calls coming in at the same time, and the more resources that you can share amongst those calls, it makes it a lot easier to handle those spikes that come in. And one of the, you know, one of the problems I think is that the police department does such a good job and you're so successful that it makes your marketing for more officers harder to get through. And I do think that, and this is something I've suggested before, and I don't know if I don't want to put Mr. Bilder back on the spot, but, you know, we've talked about finding some sort of an outside agency, an independent voice to come in and review staffing levels. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Not at the moment.
Okay. You're kind of the person I look to on this stuff, so, you know, but I think that's one of the key things is that with the technologies changing, and I certainly don't consider myself to be an expert on public safety, but, you know, I'd really like to make sure we have an independent viewpoint on this as well going forward.
Mr. Quentin.
Just one, the St. Paul's task capacity is about similar to Rochester's. The thing, the difference is they get about $50 million more each year in local government aid than the city of Rochester gets. But the tax capacity per capita,
really about the same. Per capita, that's the huge thing. But they have to cover a lot less area with three times the tax, or the
well,
same area with three times the taxes.
More in local government aid, too, yeah. Which helps.
Well, and that's just the thing, though. If we took the city of Rochester and we tripled our, you know, if we tripled our tax revenue right now, it would be a lot easier to fund things like the police department.
And Mr. Ruska.
I just want to tag on. I don't know that land use is the issue. I think, you know, reducing busy streets into one-lane walkable streets is certainly harming response time.
Any data to support that?
I've heard that from the fire chief, so I just want to throw that in there. One of the things, Roger, you know, I appreciate, again, the great work that you and your department do. I think the council's always tried to be very supportive of your request and the balance of the big picture here. I'm a little concerned, you know, looking at this, if we funded all 13 positions, that maybe you'd fall off the ladder at the end of the year here, so you know, that probably isn't going to happen. So, I mean, with that, we'd like to, but we'll work on it. But I think the biggest challenge with me in some of this is prioritizing some of these things. I know last year we looked at it and we kind of thought we felt like we had to do something, so we added two police positions in it. And I felt like, is that the best thing? You know, is that create some imbalance? And you know, if you have too much of one and not enough of the other, is it really efficient? So I guess, you know, I like Randy's comments about trying to give us some ideas on results and what the biggest impact would be, but also maybe you know, as we get near the end of the year or in budget time, a prioritization of what things you really are essential and then needed and then wanted, you know, type of thing, something of that nature. But then the other thing is that I think Mr. Hickey talked about it earlier about the intelligent led policing. We put a lot of resources into that program too, and hopefully that's benefiting. And then also the CSO program. I think the council's put a lot of resources into those things. So hopefully the police department sees that the council's doing a lot to support. We really appreciate seeing the great results. We're concerned about the response times, and we'll do what we can to work on that. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Mr. Campion, then Ms. Means.
I think the feedback I'd like to give first. I was really thrilled that the specific document worked out just the way I hoped it would, where we had one page of kind of this is the status and one page of what's the future. That was great. So I think you set a really high bar for everyone else to meet, and I expect everyone else to meet it. The next part is, you're a reasonable person. I know from talking to you a few times, a 7% growth of our police department would be hard for us to sustain for any amount of time. It's 7% growth in staffing. I'm kind of looking to see, you know, what can we do to help get out of this quandary. And I don't see it as just one we can buy our way out of. I think that we have to come up with some sort of strategy that for the long term, you're not going to be back asking for 13 people every year. Because we will be, I think I'm not the only one that says, you can probably prioritize your top two positions. You know, the 11 beyond that are going to be a significant stretch for the council to support. So I'm kind of looking to you to say, tell us how, you know, we can help make this easier for you, how your department can be run better, it's run great, but how we can get out of this kind of repetitive cycle of proposal.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, the first suggestion was, of course, to increase our local government aid by $50 million.
I got a guy on it.
I think there's two sides of that equation. You're absolutely right. 7% increase yearly is not feasible to sustain. By the same token, a 0% increase for the last 5 years was not a reasonable expectation either, that we would not be faced with significant increases in demand as the population has grown, as the population density has increased. So when we look at that sustaining cycle, how do we break that? We think we tried really hard to leverage technology as much as we possibly could to resolve as many of these issues as we could. We certainly looked at reorganization as a means for greater staffing at peak times, recognizing that we're creating a mortgage at other times by doing that. One of the issues that we have addressed in that is recognizing that it's very, very difficult to play catch-up. And how do you create a mechanism that's going to stay ahead of that curve? Is the real discussion in terms of, a little bit was mentioned, is the infrastructure that goes into support decisions that create the demand for service. I think there's other, in my view, and as police chief, I don't get to do traffic engineering, and I don't get to do the urban planning. But I think there is an avenue there to explore, is to say, when we're creating this type of infrastructure that's going to create that demand for service, part of the cost for that has to be that assessment of what's public safety, what portion of public safety is going to create that demand, what's going to be the cost of that. And I don't think, as we've gone through the budget discussion, every department will identify their needs. Every department will identify going forward, here's what we need. But it's not a cohesive discussion about, if you do this, this is going to be the result on our side. And I think that needs to be part of that council discussion going forward, to create that sustaining mechanism to say, growth is not all about building. It's not all about streets. We need the infrastructure and public safety, and I think the fire chief would tell you that as well as the sheriff's office, is we need to look at what that growth is costing outside of bricks and mortar and asphalt. To me, that would be that sustaining mechanism to say, yeah, there is a cost to what we want to do in terms of development.
Quick follow-up on to the budget, on the particular format, so thank you for the answer. One, I'll retract anything that suggested that the department is not being run great, because clearly all of the statistics suggest that we're doing really well. Third, prioritization of the positions is imperative to me. And so for people that have yet to go, that'd be one piece of feedback here, is if you're asking for positions, they should be in a prioritized list so that we understand what is your priority as the department. Thank you again.
Recognize the reason we did not do that is because I did not want to go back to my department tomorrow and start a big fight over.
I have a concern about the prioritization. For example, if you're saying that you want his top two priorities or top two positions, you've already destroyed the patrol group who's asked for four people. When you have a 24-hour shift 7 days a week, you can't just say that. So if you're asking for prioritization, if you're asking for a high, medium, low, and justification for that high, medium, low, I can go along with that, but I'd be concerned when we start putting a number on, you can have your top two choices out of two positions versus 14. So I have concern with that. I would be more happy if you were to come back and say these are high positions because of this, or medium priority because of this.
I already know these are 13 high priority positions.
It makes it very difficult when you look at a group that has to work 24/7, mm-hmm. and then we're saying, well, we'll only let you have maybe two positions on this. I don't want to get that.
I respect that.
So
I think that's a good point.
That's the only concern I have about that.
My major issue is just, I think that when we're putting out, 13 positions is a significant amount, if you look at it relative to the entire city workforce. So I think when we're putting it out, we just have to be cognizant of, if you're saying one 24-hour position, maybe that takes up all your high priority ones. I don't know quite how we'd want to structure it, but I do think it's worthwhile exercise to have the department say, this is my top, or this is our top priority, this is our second tier priority.
And I would rather do that versus saying you only get two positions, take your top two positions, because again, when you start looking at it, we're going to have groups come in that are 24/7. We're going to have groups that are just pretty much Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. that's going to have a huge impact.
And having
so I just want everybody to be cognizant.
Having the significant debate would also probably not benefit, because some of the priority decision is on the city council, that this is our priority, that, you know, street policing is the most important. So I think it's worth pause.
I was just going to add, too, this is where an experienced police chief delegates it to your new captain to come up with a prioritized list.
Well, I will say, just as a caveat there, that when we had this discussion internally, that list was 29 positions long. So it's not that we didn't prioritize in the sense that we went from what do you need, what do you want, and from what do you want was quickly eliminated and focused on what you need.
Duly noted.
All right. Ms. Means, you had a question.
I just have a comment. I think we have an excellent police department, and I thank you and everybody that's involved in this with the service that you provide. I'm always surprised about the response time because, you know, it's too long. Okay. So, and I appreciate that you've talked to, shared your information about St. Paul and that we're the same square miles and they have twice the people, and the, Mr. Quinville talking about 50 million in LGA. But what I heard you say that's important to me, and that is how do you keep pace? We know that we're going to have some growth in this community, and it's going to happen now, and it's going to happen in 10 years, and it's going to happen in 20 years. We're going to continue to grow. We might even exceed St. Paul in density at the rate we're going, if we get the some of the not have those large, what do you call it, mega mansions that we
McMansions.
McMansions. Okay, you're going to have to move out of yours, Mr. Worcher.
You bet. No, I can't happen fast enough.
So I think that keeping pace is really important for us to have these numbers and when we're going to need them and have some idea of how can we keep pace with the growth with our budget. Now, as we grow, we get more taxes, more property taxes, but I don't know, 14 high positions that you've indicated here. How do we keep pace? So that's what I'd like to know. I don't like to see us fall so far back.
No, that's what we don't obviously want to fall behind either. Mm-hmm. But I think and I appreciate the city administrator structuring this so we can have this discussion in April as opposed to November when it's too late. And I think the discussions about how do we do that for the next 6 months, we'll certainly be focused on it.
You know, so what is the impact on the intelligent-led policing with the number of officers that we may be able to reduce, or the number of services that we can reduce because of the technology?
Well, I think in terms of reduction of service, that's been the last resort, if you will, in terms of the police department. There are services that we provide that are they, for instance, funeral escorts. Critical? No. Although I think there's certainly people in the community that would argue that point, that it is a really key service that the city of Rochester provides as part of the quality of life here in terms of what people can expect from the city in terms of the service that we provide. I think there's a number of, as we looked at our response, particularly as that response time grows to, quote, lower priority calls, they directly impact that quality of life in our community. And I think that's what we hear the most, is that we, in Rochester, expect and demand a level of service, particularly from public safety, that perhaps you're correct. In other cities, they may not have that expectation. But we do here, and I think that's really key for us as to why this city is what it is. And the last thing we want to do is sacrifice it. One of the discussions we had about dispatch was that, you know, given the volume of calls, we can go to a automatic answering, you know, if you want to report a crime, press one kind of thing. Well, that's a level of service that I think is just contrary to the culture in our city and certainly our police department. People pick up the phone, they want to talk to a person, and we want to preserve that. We do.
I don't think I expressed myself well on that one, because I certainly don't want to reduce services in any way, because we expect a high level of response. What I meant is, rather than use a yellow pad and a number two pencil, how has intelligent-led policing, or how will that ultimately affect the amount of paper and pencils we may need?
Well, I think, not to overlap the concept, what intelligence-led policing is doing for us is identifying our most prolific offenders in the community, because they're responsible for the most crime. And it's allowing us to focus our resources on it, and therefore drop that level, particularly of serious crime in the community. We can be successful at that, and I think our results over the last 3 years would certainly demonstrate that. What it doesn't do for us is, as I said, when officers, and we have, along with this effort for, you know, that intelligence-led policing effort, the exponential growth of technology in the department is one that we've even had staff members that say, okay, slow down a little bit, because we need to, you know, catch up with their ability to use all of this technology. And does that make us more efficient in the technology? Absolutely, it does. But it doesn't get us the police officer any quicker to that 911 call. And when we're looking at call volume and geographic area, technology won't stop.
Just help us to keep pace with the growth.
Mr. Ruskin,
just going to add, Roger, I know during the year we see, I know your department's doing everything it can do to bring in grant requests and other funding sources that help us to add officers and help to defer costs. Like, I appreciate that. And I just want you to know your comment about it was 29, now it's 13. Obviously, you know, shows that these positions that are requested are very well thought out, very needed. And you know, we might talk about, you know, maybe two. It's kind of up to us with the 13 to know that this is a need, and we support that. We need to figure out how to do our best to come up with, you know, the ways to get as many provided as we can. And that's where I think, you know, if we can all 13, that'd be great. I'm not sure we can, but with that, that's where the prioritization thing comes in. We certainly respect and support what's going on here with this. We just need to figure out how we're going to get through it by the year end when the budget goes around. So I appreciate your
thank you.
Okay, so found the numbers I was looking for. Rochester's total market value in 2014 was about $8.1 billion. St. Paul's, $17.1 billion. Tax capacity for Rochester, $104 million. St. Paul, $214 million. The key thing here is we have roughly the same amount of infrastructure, same amount of area to cover, and they have a tremendous amount more resources to do it. Now, they have the challenges of a great deal of poverty there, but it just shows how that, you know, these land use decisions are, you know, determining what our budgets are going to be. Oh, and Sandra, your house is on 0.27 acres. Mine is on 0.25.
Mr. Bilderback. Roger, I just want to piggyback on something Mr. Ruska said, and the fact that I know you guys are looking for grants and things of that nature. But I appreciate the way that you look at those and you use good sense in the way you select them. There's a lot of Department of Justice grants out there that say, yeah, you go ahead, we'll give you 3 years worth, and now you've got to be stuck with putting them on your payroll forever. You don't do that. You're very careful in the ones that you select, and I appreciate that. I've heard a lot of horror stories at the National League of Cities and the public safety crime prevention when people just wing it and go into it because they figure they get a few years free. And you and your department have been very careful not to put an unknowing burden on the city and the population. It would help you, but it also would bring a lot of headaches to the rest of us. So I do appreciate the fact that you're out there looking, but you're very careful in what you select.
We are trying not to create a mortgage for you.
Well, I promise these reports would be relatively brief. Hopefully this has been a good conversation.
So standing.
We look at it as important. We're very happy to hear what the police department hears as a priority. So this will be helpful as you go into the details of your budget process and going forward. So were there any other comments or other quick business items for this afternoon, Mr.
The website transition is leaving some links broken. Is that just going to fade out over time? I think every five of the one that you had, but if you find any more, you have to
I've got a few complaints about things like the LDM and other PDF documents we have that used to be directly accessible are not directly accessible on the website anymore from Google. So, food for thought, just getting to follow up with you and send you.
Yeah, I'm sure that Google stores are not going to be accurate anymore. And I don't know how to
I love using Google to find those documents. It's not just me, but I think it's worth looking into. I'll say that, you know, I
have a little time to sort out. I'm told, Ms. Baker, do you have a comment for this afternoon?
A very quick one. Roger brought up a great point earlier when he was talking about how the city grows and discussions about future growth patterns and so forth. Doesn't have to police force their call demand and their response times. And that's certainly the case for the fire department as well. It certainly impacts things like potential branch libraries, park and recreation needs, and other things too. And I just want the council to know that with the comprehensive plan work that we're doing, we're engaging and talking with the different departments, and we'll be meeting in 2 months with all the department heads too, because we're trying to take into account all these different issues so when these things come before you, you have a more full picture. And we're looking at the pros and cons of different decisions and how those things may be impacting operations of the city and also the financial implications of that. And we've taken some information directly from the police department and also from the fire chief that will be incorporated into informing the plan and some of the information for you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Newman.
I have heard Roger's argument is different, that when you pack people and pay together, that causes more costs. So
you know what?
We'll have to
he's addressed this before. Mr. Newman, I want you to address that one correctly because we don't want that out there.
Yeah, I think the as we've discussed the issue of population density, recognize that population density is not a function of where people live. It's actually a function of where they are at any given time. And with the concentration of people in the downtown area, and I had a map that our crime analysis folks did this on, I'll just show you very briefly to illustrate this point, is this is our calls for service. And you can see that the population density as people come in to work at the Mayo Clinic and they come in as patients at the Mayo Clinic, this is the area that they concentrate. It doesn't have anything to do with where they live. It has everything to do with where they are. And that's why you have that red spot right in the middle of the town. We don't have that many people that actually live downtown, so to speak. But we have a significant population density in that area, and that's what's driving the calls for service. That's why we have that concentration. And, not coincidentally, why we have that response time, particularly on the periphery of the city, is because while our officers are focused in those areas of high calls for service, the areas outside of that, on the periphery of the city, a little bit of the urban planning issue that you're talking about, it creates a real deficit there in terms of response time.
I'm not saying you don't have an issue, Michael, but it's more nuanced, I think, than
Singapore has the highest population density in the world.
Well, I'm just saying that's not. I heard different.
Those are calls for service. Just on that map, that was calls for service.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure that wasn't just.
You will get this information and intend to present this to you as part of the feasibility study precinct.
Okay.
But I will just briefly give you a little spoiler alert. The areas in red on this map, that's a 12 to 28 minute response time in the city of Rochester. And as you can see, that's not all just on the borders in the city. That's a response time that's really affecting everybody in there. The blue areas, we're looking pretty good. The red areas, we're not. That's what we're trying to address.
Are you in the red area, Mr. King?
I might be in a red area. I'm sure.
Not anymore. Not since the election.
Yeah, you can put a person in the community guard.
Ward watch. You get all the, wink your feet and watch and watch and birds.
They used to be called vigilantes. I like to think of them as vigilantes.